Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM, Delmarva's first choice for NPR News.
President Obama unveiled a comprehensive legislative package on controlling gun violence this week. And his proposals come as states like Maryland and Delaware are also moving towards tightening up their gun laws. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. It's been about a month since the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut that left 20 children dead, a day that the president described as the worst of his presidency. So the president, upon recommendation from the Vice President Joe Biden, outlined a series of executive orders as well as some proposed legislation to crack down on gun violence. These include a ban on assault weapons sales, a limit on the number of bullets that can be held in a gun clip, and a strict background check for those purchasing a firearm, including at gun shows. In addition, there is a proposal to set aside funds for additional security in the nation's schools, and his proposal mirrors those by both Delaware Governor Jack Markell and Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. New York, by the way, has already approved such legislation. And we want to first turn to Vince DiMarco. He's with the Maryland Healthcare for All Coalition and has also been involved with the issue of gun violence. And I understand, Vince, that you earlier in this week, you were at the White House, and now you're going to the to Annapolis to meet with the governor in terms of trying to crack down this kind of gun violence.
Yes, Don, thank you so much for having me on your show. We are today launching a new organization, Marylanders to Prevent Gun Violence, which will bring together a broad coalition to help enact Governor O'Malley's life-saving proposals. And yes, I was, I'm also the national coordinator of Faiths United to Prevent Gun Violence. And in that capacity, I was in a meeting of national faith leaders with Vice President Biden and at the White House when the president announced his plan. Both President Obama and Governor O'Malley have proposed reasonable, smart measures that will reduce gun violence by banning assault weapons and high-capacity gun magazines like the one used in the Newtown tragedy and in Aurora and the other mass shootings, and by putting a tighter lid on guns getting into the illegal market. When you have universal background checks and, as Governor O'Malley has proposed, licensing handgun purchasers, there'll be many fewer guns getting into the hands of criminals, and we'll save lives. States like New Jersey and New York that have fingerprint licensing of handgun purchasers have dramatically fewer gun deaths. It's a smart proposal, and we strongly support the governor's going forward with it. And we urge the General Assembly to enact it.
Let me ask you this. How optimistic are you that legislation will get through Congress at the national level? We've already seen a lot of pushback, certainly from the National Rifle Association, a lot of skepticism on certainly some of the Republican congressional members. And what do you think is going to be the toughest to try to get through Congress, do you think?
Well, the toughest is going to be an assault weapons ban, but we're going to fight very hard for it. We need to ban these weapons of mass destruction that are only useful for the military and should not be in private hands. However, there's a growing consensus across the political spectrum for universal background check. Just the other day, Southern Baptist Convention, representing 20 million very conservative evangelical Southern Baptists, endorsed universal background checks. And I was in a debate the other day with someone from the Cato Institute, a very, very conservative libertarian group, who opposed the assault weapons ban, but supported universal background checks. And what we're hearing is a growing consensus behind that. And if the problem, Don, is that the Brady Law was a great law that required background checks at all sales at gun dealers across the country, which is wonderful, and millions of people who shouldn't get guns have been stopped. But it doesn't require a background check at gun shows and for private sales. And 40% of all gun sales around the country happen at gun shows and private sales. As a result, people without who shouldn't get a gun because of a criminal background will go into somewhere in Texas or North Carolina or somewhere that doesn't require checks at gun shows and get the gun. And that's how a lot of deaths happen. Maryland does require background checks and gun shows and private sales, which is great. But we're going to go a step further under Arnell Malley, and that and by requiring gun purchasers to get a license first. And that deters people from going to a gun dealer and getting a gun for a criminal. And that is why there'll be less gun deaths in Maryland if we enact this law.
Just briefly, before we let you go, how optimistic are you that there's been at least some kind of serious shift in public opinion and momentum in terms of gun control that clearly has certainly been missing since 2004 when the Brady Bill, of course, lapsed and perhaps even before? Do you see some shift now going on, not only in public opinion, but even in states and congressional members?
Well, first of all, Don, the Brady Bill did not lapse. That's still law. It was the assault weapons.
Assault weapons. I'm sorry. Yes.
So that's okay. No problem. But yes, there's been a massive shift in public opinion. Think about it as comparable to what happened in 1963 when police dogs in Birmingham, Alabama attacked kids. And Americans all across the country saw that. And when they saw that, they decided, the people of America decided, there shall be a civil rights law. And it happened. It was a complete momentous change in public attitude. Same thing with the Newtown killings. When Americans saw six-year-olds riddled by assault weapons bullets, they said, we're going to do something on this issue, and it's only a matter of time. It's going to happen.
We've been speaking with Vince DeMarco. He's with Maryland Healthcare for All Coalition, also involved in the attempt to get some gun control legislation passed. Appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Don, very much.
Bye-bye. Certainly. I want to now turn to Wicomico County Sheriff Mike Lewis. And first of all, Sheriff, want to get your own reaction to what we've seen now with the president's offering up legislation in the wake of Sandy Hook. We've now seen a number of states, certainly Delaware and Maryland, are looking at gun control and banning, for instance, assault weapons. New York's already moved very quickly to do that. What do you see on the landscape in terms of gun control?
Well, I can tell you we can never legislate ourselves out of this problem. We can't legislate ourselves out of this problem. There are a number of things we can do. For instance, a universal background check. So I fully support that. No question about that. I fully support that. But we cannot, if we simply enforce the laws we have on our current books, we have sufficient laws to adequately address this problem. Something that has not been addressed in many, many years are the issues of mental health. That's something that's always been lacked. And even today, we continue on a weekly basis to take perhaps dozens of people in our region for mental health evaluations to PRMC. Under HIPAA laws, those issues and those files are sealed. They are never brought up during the purchase of handguns, during the purchase of assault weapons, rifles, long guns. We can't use that information and determine whether someone should be eligible to purchase a long gun or a handgun. So those are issues that need to be addressed, mental health issues. But the laws we have on the books are certainly, I believe, sufficient outside of universal background checks. I do believe we should have universal background checks. I fully support that. But again, Don, these are things that are very, very tragic and very unfortunate that have occurred in Newtown, Connecticut. But unfortunately, they're inevitable, and it's going to occur again. We'll never be able to legislate ourselves out of this problem.
Well, what's your feeling about the proposal, for instance, to limit magazines in terms of the number of bullets in them, as well as some kind of ban on the sale of assault weapons? Those seem to be two real controversial issues, as we just heard from Vince.
Well, I do not support the ban of assault weapons. High-capacity magazines to the average citizen, perhaps we should look at that and limit that. But I do not support the ban of military assault weapons at all.
And why is that?
I think it's our God-given right to bear arms. I think it's our Second Amendment right to bear arms, and I think we should not infringe upon that.
I also want to turn to Greg Shipley. He's with the Maryland State Police. And Greg, I wanted to get some sense in terms of the number of guns we're talking about that say, for instance, that fall into criminals' hands. And how do we – what are the stats on this kind of thing? Greg, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Yeah. So what are the stats in terms of the kinds of guns that are out there, the kinds of number of guns that fall into criminals' hands, and how does if somebody wants to get an illegal gun or gun they might not be qualified for, how does that come about?
Well, certainly, as Sheriff Lewis is well aware of, and police all across Maryland, if criminals work hard enough to get a gun, they will try to find one, and that's something that state and local law enforcement continually work to combat. I know the state police is very involved with local police and federal authorities working across the state to combat gun crimes, gun trafficking, and there are a number of efforts underway to do that. But just looking at Maryland in 2011, murders committed in Maryland that year, of those murders committed, 68% were committed with a firearm. And in robberies, 45% of the robberies committed in Maryland in 2011 were committed with firearms. And assaults, 14% of aggravated assaults committed in Maryland in 2011 were committed with firearms. And so certainly a very serious issue and one that continues to be at the forefront and for good reasons.
Now, I understand that something in the neighborhood, I saw one figure that something in the neighborhood of like 50% of illegal gun purchases are basically straw purchases. That's where someone either is a gun dealer who buys a bunch of guns and then sells them illegally, or perhaps an individual who they may know who qualifies to, say, buy a gun but buys it for somebody who might not be qualified. What's the situation there? I mean, is that an accurate way to look at how people get illegal guns?
You know, I could not verify that number, and I think that number is very high.
You think so?
I do, and the reason is this. In 1996, Maryland passed the Gun Violence Act under the administration of Governor Glenn Denning and outlawed straw purchases at that time. Now, that doesn't mean they stopped, but we made it very clear, and there's been an ongoing effort to make firearms dealers aware of this, and by and large, firearms dealers in Maryland certainly are very cognizant of these laws, and they're very aware of these potentials for straw purchases, and so they're on the alert for this, and gun dealers themselves often turn away people that they think might be involved in a straw purchase, and so it is something that you know, I think if criminals are getting guns, they're getting those from breaking and enterings and selling them on the street, you know, more than they're doing straw purchases.
I want to turn to Sheriff Lewis for a moment, because at the bottom, you're on the front lines, and you would have to carry out oftentimes, particularly from the state, any kind of background check stuff. I mean, for instance, I know that there's a proposal that not only would require someone, if they want to get a firearm, to get a license for, or to be licensed in some fashion from the state, but as well as including fingerprints and so on. How are the sheriffs or how are law enforcement involved in that process, or how do you think they might be involved?
You know, it's too premature to tell right now, yeah. Don. I'm not sure how we're going to be involved in that.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that? You think that's a good idea?
I do.
That kind of tightness?
I certainly do, and I support that.
Mm-hmm. And what about now? You obviously see, you know, illegal guns. From your experience, how are criminals buying illegal guns?
I can tell you, in the overwhelming majority of the crimes that are committed throughout the state of Maryland, not just Wicomico County, it has been my experience that, as Greg said earlier, criminals will get a gun. Rarely does a criminal commit a homicide with that weapon that we recover at the scene or recover during the course of the investigation. Is it ever registered to the person who committed the crime? These guns were obtained illegally on the street. It's rare that a criminal who commits a homicide and armed robbery has purchased that weapon legally. It's very, very rare.
I want to also now turn to the schools. Andy Turner, you're with the Wicomico County Schools, in charge of security, that sort of thing for the district. What is the district doing in terms of the security for students right now? What are you guys doing?
Well, in view of the Sandy Hook incident, we've had to reevaluate what we're doing as far as safety and security in our schools. And what we're doing is looking at our perimeters. And we've decided to make our schools not user-friendly on the outside, meaning in making it more difficult for people to get in. We're establishing buzzers and videos, video cameras outside our front entrances, and we're making sure that our outer doors are secure, meaning that they are locked. We're doing more with our visitors when they come. We're making a video record of them. We're having them sign in, register when they come in and when they leave, and also to state their purpose as far as why they're there. In a number of our schools, we're putting in vestibules where people have to go into the front office where they can't just walk in and walk down the hall, so that we're eliminating that kind of user-friendly stuff. The other thing, too, is most important is that we have nine SROs and a supervisor assigned
and
to
us.
SROs are school resource officers assigned to us from the sheriff's office. And we work very closely with them in evaluating the security of our buildings and the safety of our students and staff all the time. But in that, no matter how much security you have, if there's someone out there who wants to do someone harm, it doesn't matter. And we saw that at Columbine, it doesn't matter who you have. So what we're trying to do now is create an environment where if someone feels unsafe or someone feels uncomfortable with what they see or what someone says, we want them to see it and tell it. Tell a responsible authority what they see, what makes them feel uncomfortable. And we kind of feel that if we have more eyes and ears out there in our building and around our building, we will be much safer.
I want to just briefly ask you, both of you, because there's been some suggestion that, for instance, that staff perhaps should be armed in schools, that maybe even right down to the teacher. I don't know about that. Sheriff Lewis, I want to start with you. What do you think about that idea, the idea that perhaps not just a sheriff, you know, law enforcement individual, but somebody on a school staff, do you think that's a good idea?
Well, it would certainly be something I'd have to work with in a collaborative effort with our Board of Education, you know, designate certain people within a school to care a farm. I don't know that would be a good idea.
Yeah.
That might be best left up to law enforcement, I think, to handle that issue and address that issue. As Andy said a while ago, I've met more with Andy probably in the last month than we have in the last couple of years, but this issue in Newtown has certainly raised a number of issues that we are looking at right now. And we can work to better protect our children, protect our schools. And we're currently doing that. And we want to make our schools as safe as we possibly can, Don. But the bottom line, if someone is intent on getting into that school, they're going to do it. But we want to try to prevent it as best we can and be prepared and train and retrain and try to prepare for the worst. And inevitably, it's going to happen again.
Real quickly, Andy, any consideration of that at all? You're smiling. It doesn't look like that's in the cards.
Well, I have a strong law enforcement background.
Yeah.
And I just kind of feel that unless you are trained with a firearm and have had experience with a firearm, this is not a population for it.
Oh, we've been speaking with Comico County Sheriff Mike Lewis, also Maryland State Police Officer Greg Shipley, as well as Andy Turner with the Comico County Schools. I want to now turn to the Comico County School Board. We now want to turn to Kim Hudson. She is a member of the Wicomico County Board of Education, also founder of Parents in Action, and also is a parent who has children attending the schools in the area. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, I want to turn back actually about a month and get, first of all, your reaction to when you heard the news about the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting and when it really became apparent that this was a tragedy like no other.
Well, I have to say that my reaction was probably stronger than I ever anticipated it could be. As a parent, I just cannot fathom what those families experienced and what they're having to move forward with. So I wanted to go immediately to my kids' schools and get them and hug them. I didn't do that, but that's exactly where I wanted to be.
And when you finally did see them, what were your own thoughts?
Oh, well, you know, it was the tough call of what do you share with your kids? I have a daughter who is 9 and a son who is 12. So I was sort of in a different place with each of them and just, you know, wanting to hug them and hold them and not wanting to let them out of my sight. However, my son had a middle school dance that night. So, you know, we opted to sit and to talk about it for a little bit. I wanted him to hear it from me. I didn't want him to go to a middle school dance and hear from all of the other kids, you know, and have rumors going on. So we shared and we talked about it and I sent him off to the dance.
And what was the reaction to hearing this? And not only obviously initially, but as the days go on, obviously they're hearing more and more about what happened.
You know, kids are funny. Sometimes they don't share what their reactions are. We in my house, we talked about just that this was an isolated incident. I wanted them to feel safe. I didn't want them to have nightmares or worry about what could potentially happen. Because let's face it, we could all feel that way every day. So their reactions were more sympathy and compassion for the families, for those that had lost loved ones.
By the way, was there any concern on their part about their own safety as they went forward in the school?
You know, the week after Sandy Hook, there were a lot of rumors that were generated in the county. A lot of kids were sending things through text, through social media, that something was going to happen. And as a parent, I talked to especially my middle school child. And to be honest with you, if he had shared any concerns. This was right before the break. If he had shared any concerns about not feeling safe or not wanting to go to school, you know, I probably would have taken a different approach. But he did not. My daughter did not either. They both felt that, you know, we kind of went on with a regular schedule and everything was good. I felt confident that the schools were handling things absolutely the best way that they could.
Now, what I turn, you know, a month later to where we are right now, in which we have a whole slew of proposals for gun control. The president, as you know, this week laid out a series of proposals, including the banning of the sale of assault weapons, the limitation on the magazines, as well as trying to nail down perhaps getting more strict licensing for handguns and so on, as well as perhaps offering some assistance to schools in terms of security. What was your impression of the president this week in terms of his presentation and in terms of what he's trying to do?
Well, I feel strongly that especially in light of Sandy Hook, but not only Sandy Hook, in other, you know, the violence that is in our world today, I feel strongly that action needs to be taken. I feel like, you know, it's wonderful to sit and to have the conversations about it and to know that something needs to be done. But I applaud the president for taking action. I have to say that I have much respect for those who hunt, for those who own a gun and have done so legally and maintain all of the regulations and are very safe with them. However, as a mother, as a community member, I do not see the need for assault-style weapons to be owned by individuals. I do, again, applaud the president and others taking action. I think that we are living in an environment where violence is running rampant. And until we take some measures to help curb that violence, nothing is going to change.
One of the proposals has been the idea of more security at the schools. With some suggestions that perhaps someone be designated or maybe several staff members be designated to actually even carry weapons. What's your own feeling about that?
That causes me great concern. You know, we have school resource officers who work in our middle schools and in our high schools, and they are trained. They work for the sheriff's department, and they are individuals who are trained and know how to use a weapon, and that has been part of their job. To have school employees be considered an armed guard, to me, is a very scary thought. As a mom, I do not want to think that I am sending my child to school and that there is someone in the school who potentially has to pull out that weapon. Unfortunately, even with a school resource officer or with one of these armed guards, if they are in an opposite side of a building, you know, a tragedy such as Sandy Hook could potentially still happen. I think that we have to look at the big picture. We want our kids to be safe. I took my daughter and dropped her off to school the following Monday after the tragedy at Sandy Hook, and my heart did a little pitter-patter as I watched her walk into the school building. I mean, we absolutely, as a parent, one of our top priorities is to keep our kids safe. But I think we want to do that in a climate that is, you know, conducive to teaching our kids how to be safe in a responsible way. Our schools are working together. There are safety committees in place. All across the world, schools are banding together to see what they can do to make sure that we have the safest environment possible. But for me personally, arming people in our schools is not the way to go.
Let me just follow up on that, because I know Delegate Mike McDermott, who has suggested that, by the way, but amongst other things, also suggested that the school staff, perhaps, or select school staff, also adopt some less lethal technology, things like a taser, for example, as opposed to a gun. How do you feel about that? Have you considered that much?
You know, I can't say I've given that a whole lot of thought yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the thing. You know, do you it's giving the protection to somebody that, you know, maybe we don't know a whole lot about what training they've had. Somebody has a taser and something really makes them mad. I want to be sure that the person who is protecting my children has been very well trained, is receiving continuous training, like somebody who works for the sheriff's department, somebody who has been skilled and has received this training. I don't want just anyone. I'm not willing to put a weapon or even one of these types of taser gun into somebody's hands that, perhaps is not receiving the same level of training.
Are you optimistic that we will see some kind of gun control reform, whether it's the assault weapons or it's the magazines or maybe a little bit more beefed up security at the schools and so on? Mental health is obviously another one of these components. Because this time it does seem to be different. I know, for instance, in the state of New York, they've already passed a set of legislation like that. Both in Delaware and in Maryland, both governors have proposed similar legislation. There seems to be movement now where there has not been in many, many years. Are you optimistic that something will be done?
You know, I think when a tragedy like Sandy Hook happens, those victims, those children, cannot have died in vain. I do not think that this is a catalyst for groups to come forward and, you know, try to push their own personal agendas. But I do think that as a nation, we need to take a step back and take a hard look. I know as a parent, I will support more legislation. And it begs the question for me, if we're being safe as a nation and if we want to curb violence as a nation, why not make it a little bit harder to get a gun? I don't want to take that right away, but why not make it just a little bit harder if it could potentially save the life or stop one of these tragedies from happening? Then I'm okay with extending the time that it takes to do a background check or to make it a little bit harder for somebody to walk in and purchase a gun. So I am very optimistic that we are at a place that people are going to come together in support of a less violent nation.
Along those lines, one of the issues that has been raised is video games, that kind of thing, that obviously can often be violent in their own context. Are you concerned about that kind of entertainment? And you have children who obviously, some of them might be attracted to, gee, I really want to play this. What What's your feeling about that?
If you ask my family, they're going to say I have talked about this for a long time. I think some of these video games that are out there today are way too violent. We don't have them in our house. I'm sure my son has probably played them at friends' houses, but it's sort of our understanding at our house that they're just not accepted there. So, yeah, this is an issue that needs to be looked at wholly. You talked about mental health issues. I think that, you know, we need to relook at the resources that are available and how we're handling that. Absolutely, violence is everywhere in our community, from commercials to movies and television and the video games. We definitely need to take a look at it.
We've been speaking with Kim Hudson. She is a member of the Wicomico County Board of Education, also co-founder of Parents in Action, and also has children of her own in the schools here in Wicomico County. We appreciate you stopping by and talking with us.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.